Dome Theory.
This is the Dome Theory Podcast. You know what that means. Theories from the Dome. I'm Bobby Manning, and you know this show before is the Bobcast, and I haven't been doing it for a long time, to be honest. Between the Celtics show, this new Syracuse show we're doing, all the different coverages, it just kind of fell by the wayside. We had a few episodes here there with Linda Ozay, and I love the show. Like, back when I did it for the first time, in the summer of 2016, I still look back on those shows, whether it was the DA episode or Kevin Zwerbel and Beast from the Northeast or Shea Serrano especially. That episode was amazing. I really want to get this back. So, we're doing it. And since the Bobcast came and went, we didn't keep it going consistently. And more importantly, there was another Bobcast in Canada, a hockey show, that leaped right over me on iTunes, or Google, rather. We're changing the name, and Dome Theory sounds just right to me. It probably makes you think of something weird. We see it as Theories from the Dome, and I say we because I have a friend along for the ride. You know him from the Celtics postgame show if you listen. Taylor McLeod has been with us at CLNS Media, working on that show for two seasons now, in a scheduling role, in a host role, even a little bit of call screening. And now he is going to be the producer of the Dome Theory Podcast, which we're going to broadcast live from Syracuse every week. And if breaking news comes up, pressing issues around here, any national stuff that arises that just needs our attention, needs us to bite into it with some thoughts, expertise, or just our regular interviews where we see how these people came from aspiration to accomplishment. We're still doing that, but we're going to mix it up a little bit here or there. We're at Theory, which is where we're going to broadcast most of these, the apartment building in Syracuse, New York. And of course, the Game Gods inspiration from that place up on the top of the hill where they play the games here. So, Taylor,
yes, sir.
Welcome. Thank I'm going to bring you in. He's behind the glass here with a variety of topics. Now, we had to bring the heat for this one since we're just kind of rambling today and getting our feet off the ground. The 2020 year is coming, and I don't think too many people have given this much awareness because I haven't seen anybody preparing end of the decade lists, whether it's music, any of that. I love that stuff. Our buddy Sam Sheehan at Celtics blog did a great list last year, his New Year's resolutions. And every time I get to the end of the new year, new decade, whatever it is, and I'm just like, oh crap, there's only 3 weeks left. I didn't get to do a list. I didn't get to do any special commemoration for the amount of time that just passed. We're going to get ahead on this. So 2020's coming. 2010s was really our first full years aware of sports
right.
and all the developments.
Right.
And I wanted to look ahead to the 2020s and see what are sports going to look like, but most importantly, what are the big questions in sports coming once January strikes and we get into a new decade. And it's good because we've seen basketball transform with the three-point shot right up until the end of the decade. We've seen football from a rules standpoint, from a physicality standpoint, look completely different than it did in 2010. So things are going to change, and they're going to change fast because we're already seeing some of these changes start to take place.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you look at this next decade coming up, I think the question is, what are sports going to look like for the next 10 years after 2020? That's a really broad question. So, you know, what I did was just pared them down to, you know, four or five questions that interest me the most that I've talked to Bob about. And starting off, you know, I'm a senior in college. Bob's a senior in college. I've been thinking a lot about college athletes getting paid. You know, you've got LeBron James, arguably the most influential athlete in the world. He's right up there with Messi and Ronaldo. He's pushing extremely hard for college athletes to be compensated, not for their likeness. California passed a bill last week or the week before that said college athletes will be allowed to profit off their likeness. Obviously, NCAA President Mark Emmert had a problem with that, going so far as to say that California schools might not be able to participate in NCAA championship games. But I think that having LeBron James behind the movement to get college athletes paid. I mean, you look again last week, New York passed, or at least proposed a bill that would allow for athletes to be compensated by their institutions, which is different than profiting off your likeness, because profiting off your likeness is obviously based on sponsorships, it's based off your performance. You bring the institution in, then it's fair, then you have, you know, more of a level playing field. So I'm thinking that in these next 10 years, We're going to see college athletes go from being unpaid, you know, employees of a university. No matter how you look at it, scholarship, whatever, you know, Shabazz Napier's snack roll or whatever, they're still unpaid in terms of real money for what they're doing on the court. So I think that's going to change. And I think a big part of it is because you have a driving force like LeBron James, and you have so many professional athletes across all sports saying now, like, the NCAA is a scam, you know, it's not correct what they're doing to these athletes. And I think that because that snowball is starting to, you know, roll down the hill and you have the professionals as the driving force behind it, I think there's going to be a major change. And I think college athletes will be paid because I don't think there's another option because the outrage will be so high at that point that there won't be another option.
I'm going to come right out and say no to this because I don't think the NCAA is going to give any sort of leeway on this issue. And you saw it in the way they responded to the California bill. They're not scared of the states, these liberal states, taking into their own hands on this issue. And New York followed suit this week, trying to get a bill through that would give athletes 15% at the gates. Any tickets that come through, 15% goes to them. It was sort of a simplified solution to this. Probably more of a way to get people talking about this issue again.
Patriots just cut AB.
That would bring it to... We have breaking news right now.
We do. The New England Patriots have released Antonio Brown amidst his sexual assault allegations. You've got the 2018 allegations from his ex-trainer, Brittany Taylor. You had a couple others come up from a 2017 case that was kind of put out of reach by a statute of limitations, and you have the whole farting in the doctor's face issue. You have, you know, a couple other issues, and then yesterday the text messages came to light that he was essentially intimidating, you know, a couple former acquaintances of his, using his money, using his wealth as a means to say that he was going to, like, you know, put this girl back on.
This is unbelievable. First episode, we have this level of news. I was actually thinking about recording about this, and I said, we just don't have enough information about this yet to cast aspersions on him, the woman, anything like that. And that's stuff I don't like to get into. You know, I get people want to talk about people chasing money and all the rest. And, you know, cast aspersions on people when they're accused. If he's been cut, that means the NFL met with this woman. They got some serious insight on this. And the Patriots had to take action before it happened.
I think the bigger thing is those text messages that came out last night. Because they met with Brittany Taylor on Monday supposedly for 10 hours. He was still on the team. You know, a couple other allegations started to trickle out. Statute of limitations, he's still on the team. Then you have those text messages that come out last night. The recipient of the text messages had to go to the NFL and ask the league to stop one of their employees from intimidating her. And at that point, I would assume the NFL advised the Patriots that it was time for him to be released. And I would assume he's going to face a larger punishment from the league.
It felt too good to be true from the very moment I heard it.
100%.
I broke out the door, said, Tyler, out there in the living room. They got him.
Yeah, I did too. As a Patriots fan, I knew they could handle all the Oakland stuff. I knew, like, all the drama that happened out there in the Bay. I knew the team could handle that. But then sexual assault allegations come out, and then more come out.
That was the first thing.
Video comes out, emails come out, and then this last thing, and it was just, it's too much. Obviously, the initial sexual assault allegation, in my opinion, should have put him on the exempt list, got him off the field. I think it's been inappropriate that he's been on the field for the last 2 weeks. I didn't love that he played against Miami. I didn't love that he has been practicing with the team because, like, these are heavy. This isn't Patrick Chung getting, you know, arrested for cocaine possession, which, you know, however your feelings on that, like, that regardless, this isn't that. This is domestic violence. This is intimidation. This is a person being, like, not evil, but being a bad person.
The guy's bad news. That's the end of it. And it's over now. 1 week. I thought this was going to be a scenario that made the Patriots must-watch TV all year long. The best receiver in the NFL coming to the team with the former best receiver in the NFL with still the best quarterback in the NFL. That was box office money. And we watched them against Miami last week. Him getting involved on that first drive, the great routes, the explosion, the immediate chemistry with Brady. But you just looked off to the sideline and saw the snowball rolling in the hills. And I knew it wasn't going to last.
It just
as I saw things develop, I was like, this isn't going to last. This is too good to be true. I didn't think it would happen this quickly.
But as foolish as it sounds,
it's better that it happened quickly.
Absolutely, because the thing is, there's no room for what... There's no room for his behavior in New England, in the league, in professional sports, in the country. Like, whether or not those allegations are true, and I'm not going to get into it because there's no use in it. Like, I believe... Based on everything, I'm not believing he's a very solid person. And so my opinion on the truth of the allegations doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is, like, there is real evidence that he was intimidating someone, you know, to keep them quiet about one of these issues. And at that point, even though I feel it should have been done a while ago, that's the last straw.
And it's a mark on the Patriots, to be honest. They didn't know. I believe they didn't know. But a guy causes that much mishap in Oakland, undermines his GM, plays the helmet game, freezes his foot. It's all goofy stuff. Even the farting in the face. He didn't fart in the guy's face. He just farted aloud in the room. I hate when they compare that right to farting in someone's face. We know what farting in someone's face is, and that wasn't it. And the whole doctor situation there with the text messages he threw out about that was a whole other thing. But this just took it to a whole different place.
Yep.
Now, I'm not saying you can look at a guy doing all that goofy stuff and say, all right, is this guy a criminal? But doesn't it make you do a little more vetting instead of saying, oh my God, the best receivers on the market, let's grab them?
I mean, what I think what you had happened was the Patriots back in March, it's been pretty widely reported that they tried to send a first to Pittsburgh for him, and the Steelers wouldn't send a New England, which I understand. Goes to Oakland, that happens. And I think he hit the market. The Patriots look at the team they have, you know, really good already. Get that guy, you know, Brady's 42 years old, and you're like, hey, this is like, we're still ready. We're still geared up to go the distance. And I think it's been a guy they've loved forever. I mean, Malcolm Butler and Antonio Brown had a relationship back when, you know, Butler was the number one corner in New England. And I think that's always been there. I think they know the kind of player he is. And I think they really just jumped at an opportunity, and I think Brown was waiting for them to do that. That doesn't change my opinion, though, that they waited too long to get rid of him. And I'm glad they finally did, because regardless of the distractions on the field, I don't care about any of that. Like, that doesn't bother me at all. The field stuff doesn't matter. The fact, like, you have a criminal in your locker room. And criminal's strong, but, like, that's intimidation. There's domestic violence. These aren't light accusations. They're heavy. And at
some
point, they reach
the point of rape.
Right. At some point when they keep stacking on each other, it doesn't matter. Like, the first one, it shouldn't matter the skill of the player. But, like, when they start stacking, it's just time to go.
It's tough for a team that had a murderer in their locker room to now have this fall in their footstep. And forget all the cheating accusations. This is what we look back on at this era of Patriots football and say they put winning above anything else, which is great from a sports standpoint, but that also meant that they ended up having characters in that locker room, people cross that stage, people cash checks from Robert Kraft that right. They could have vetted better, that they could have had a better grip on.
I agree, but I also think that, and this is going to sound like I'm defending the team in this regard, but I think that the Patriot way was placed on them by other people, by outside people. They've had issues the entire time. They've had guys go down for steroids. They've had guys get arrested. They've had guys... I mean, Daron Harmon was arrested and got his captainship taken away. Chung got arrested this summer. I mean, Kevin Falk, Rodney Harrison, Ninkovich. How many guys have they had go down for PEDs? Edelman got a suspension. Everyone has always said the Patriot way. You know, they rehab these troubled players. No. They put football players in the best position to perform the best on the field. That's been their motto since day one. Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, Josh McDaniels said it in Do Your Job Part 3. They will win any way possible. And I think it's always been like that. I don't think they knew Hernandez was a murderer. I don't think they knew about the sexual assault and rape allegations against Antonio Brown. But I do think that X's and O's have been number one there always. Always.
It's troubling. Do you think Tom Brady has rescinded his invite to have Antonio Brown live with him now?
it's interesting because just as recently as last night, he posted a picture with Antonio Brown in it on Instagram and tagged him and everything. You know, there was a, it was a, I think it was a 3 or 4 part graphic, you know, that you had to slide through, and AB's in it. And that was before the most recent text messages had come out. And I thought it was strange to see Brady posting that last night, you know, further supporting AB. And actually, I went on AB's Instagram and was just looking through some of the comments, and KD is in there, you know, like, keep it up, like, you know, keep going. LeBron's in there, keep going. And that's as recently as yesterday. These recent text messages come out. He gets cut. It'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see how the opinion of him from his peers changes going forward, because you did have Brady welcome into his house. You did have Brady continue to support him. The team continue to support him amidst allegations. Will it continue? I doubt it.
I've seen people giving Bill Belichick and Brass the benefit of the doubt here because we didn't have answers. Now that he's gone, now that they've made the decision to cut him, are we owed answers on what the process was, what happened, what changed that allowed him to fly down to Miami with the team last week and now cut his season short after week two?
I think the Patriots, per usual, were hoping that if they put their head down, did what they're supposed to on the field, that the ship would right itself like it has the past couple of years. Unfortunately, this isn't the age-old, is the dynasty over problem. I mean, the problem they faced the last couple of years has been Belichick and Brady apparently don't like each other. Alex Guerrero's a problem. Gronk's going to retire. It's all like intermingled, like just, you know, personal relationship stuff. Winning rights that ship. This isn't something that winning can right. They go beat the Steelers, you know, they sign AB the next day, beat the Steelers 33-3, hang 43 on Miami the next week. Normally that fixes the problem in New England. I mean, think of all the times. Think of last year, their tough start, that, you know, starting off poorly, then you start winning. You know, you win the Super Bowl, everything's cake. You look at the most famous one, they lose to the Chiefs, you start winning, everything's fine. This isn't something that winning can fix. What fixes it is getting rid of the guy, and that's what they did.
It's unbelievable. We've seen some crazy stories to see the best receiver of the decade possibly go down in a matter of a few months the way he did between his ousting in Pittsburgh, where they said, we're done with you after week 16. Sent him out to Oakland before he played a game there, forced himself out, and now falls to this. Probably forever, I'd imagine. This is it for him unless there's startling twists that clear his name. No one's going to touch him at this point.
I mean, I wouldn't say nobody. The Cowboys willfully employed Greg Hardy a couple years ago. You know, I wouldn't say nobody will touch him, because I think that the NFL is a talent game. And I think that at the end of the day, he is one of the most talented receivers in the league. And I wouldn't be stunned to see him on, I wouldn't be stunned to see him on the field this year. He's really good football player, but I would, if I'm a team, I'm not touching him. I think someone ultimately will, unless the league takes action to make that impossible. But you're right, it is crazy to see. I don't think AB ever really got the attention until last year, really, that like someone like Odell got. But consistently, he's been the best receiver in football for the last half decade. And to see that kind of talent in less than a year completely fall off, it's been just so fast, especially the last 2 weeks. It's been startling how fast it's gone.
From day one, I said, what's going on here? It didn't seem right that the best team in the NFL would be able to acquire a talent that right. Outstanding, game-changing, box office.
It was exciting, so easily. Right? Weren't you excited when it happened initially?
I haven't watched the Patriots closely the last few years. Okay. I was ready to tune in, be eyes stuck on the TV every single week at what this was going to be.
Right. I mean, I have watched the Patriots extremely closely, you know, for the last, you know, decade that I've been conscious enough to be like a, you know, intense football fan like that. And I was still ecstatic. I knew the team was, you know, extremely good already. But when you go get a guy like that, it opens up a whole other dimension, and I was ecstatic. But you're right. The too good to be true feeling, the second those first allegations came out, it was like, here it goes.
This is a lesson, Taylor. Always question the perception.
Yeah, you have to. And it's unfortunate. I do, like I said, I think the Patriots, the Patriot way, the mystique of the Patriots, I think that's really been placed on them by a lot of outside people. Because I do think football has been the most important thing in that building for a long time. But it's just stunning to see. This 2-week saga has been stunning.
Dome theory. There's our theories from the dome on Antonio Brown that we didn't expect to be giving today. That is just fortunate timing. We're very lucky people. I've always felt that way about myself. I hope you feel that way about yourself now.
Yeah, it's just crazy that I knew when those text messages came out yesterday that there'd be a pretty good shot he would not be on the team today. Edelman in his...
Well, why didn't you say that when we turned the mic on?
Edelman in his interview today said something along the lines of, Antonio Brown is a professional, he's been focusing on the Jets, and that was it.
Oh, the Patriots from the very start had no clue how to address this from a publicity standpoint.
The Patriots all they did know was how to, they willfully ignore how they should. 2 years ago, 3 years ago at this point, actually, when Bill Belichick wrote that letter to, you know, Donald Trump, and Trump read it in New Hampshire, Bill Belichick received a ton of questions about it. Tom Brady received a ton of questions about it. And both of them deflected all of them. My thing has always been, and I wrote about it then, I tweeted about it today, don't do it if you're not going to talk about it.
Yep.
It's so frustrating to me as a Patriots fan, and especially the last couple of years as I've started to grow up and kind of started to lose the mystique of the Patriots, you know, as you come up in being media students, you kind of see some things a little bit differently. If you're not willing to talk about it, answer the questions about it, I don't do it. If you're not going to talk about Antonio Brown ever, that's part of your responsibility. You're supposed to be the masthead for this organization. I get it, but that's the thing. Football is the most important thing. No matter what they should do, football is the most important thing there. And I've been a Patriots fan my entire life, but that's the truth. Football is the most important thing. And it's been frustrating to me how they've handled it. Today, Bill Belichick apparently yelled in the hallway in frustration that he got so many questions about Antonio Brown. But my question would be, what would you expect?
They think they've earned the reputation to not be questioned. And to some degree, they have. From a football standpoint.
From a football standpoint.
And it's just the opposite from the other side.
Right.
Which is what we're talking about right now.
And you've got a pretty big percentage of the fan base who falls in step with the team. You'll see it in the Twitter replies to hard-hitting questions. People being like, you knew you weren't going to get an answer. Why'd you ask? Why'd you ask that question? Why'd you ask this? You know he's not going to talk about it. Why'd you ask this? That's a journalist's job to go out there and ask those questions. And as a fan of this team, you know, they're my favorite football team. They're probably my favorite team in sports. I'd like it to have the head coach field the questions, because the only time he's ever really fielded questions was Deflategate. The only time he's ever really gone out there and gone to bat is for Tom Brady, and I get it. But something like this, it's a mistake. They made a big mistake, and at this point, it hasn't seemed like they've owned it.
And that landed him on the late night shows with his scientist dispersions.
Right.
Wow. I think we're going to have to push back our decade discussion. But NCAA, they're going to have to change public perception. If the NCAA wants to win, and I think they will, because they have taken the approach that we're not going to give up an inch here. If we let Tyus Battle go to the mall and sign autographs, that just starts, all right, what can we get next? And that's why I think people were mad about the New York bill, because they saw it as too big of a step. All right, now Syracuse is going to give Tommy DeVito his cut of the box office at the Clemson game. They're not going to allow that. And that's a tricky balance, because you have the supporters who know we have to take this one step at a time. NCAA saying we're not even going to let them move an inch. That's where I think the NCAA has an advantage, because they can't get sweeping change to go through. And, you know, even supporters, me myself, look at sweeping change where Syracuse is going to institute a system where they pay everybody from football down to field hockey. That's a complicated issue right there. So the supporters from that end are going to look at that and say, oh, that's going to be a tough thing to accomplish. NCAA has a strong, strong stand in the status quo, especially since I think sports fans in general don't mind the status quo as long as they're getting something they enjoy. I still think, at least from my standpoint, people enjoy college football. People enjoy college basketball. So they're not going to tune out just to see this change.
College football, I think, is safe. I think college football is safe because I don't see an alternative. There have been some other leagues proposed, but I don't see an alternative to those 3 years of college football to prepare an 18-year-old kid for the NFL. The NBA is a little bit different. College basketball is a little bit different. We've seen 18-year-olds play in the NBA. We've seen guys go straight from high school to the NBA. You can't expect everyone to be LeBron James. You can't expect everyone to be Kevin Garnett. But we've seen it happen, right? So I think college basketball is under more pressure to change. And I think that I don't know if they have to change on the same timeline. But I think if you're looking at the sports, basketball is more likely to change. I think a lot of it, as I mentioned, is because there is so much support from those professional athletes. And we've seen that with basketball, athletes are able to make far more change than with football. So I think if they don't have to change on parallel timelines, I think you'll see basketball change. And despite the NCAA being staunch in their opinion, being stuck in the status quo, and Emmert really not wanting to give an inch on this matter, the NBA has already showed that they're willing to have these 18-year-old kids come into the G League. Darius Bazley, who signed to Syracuse last year as a number 9 recruit, didn't play a second in the Dome. You know, now he's in the G League. I think because there's more folks who are going to, RJ Hampton's in Australia, LaMelo Ball's in Australia, we've seen more alternative paths. And at some point, there's going to be a viable alternative in the States that's going to compete with NCAA unless the NCAA changes.
And I'm glad the NBA is taking that stand. They just added the midseason tournament too. That's going to allow G League players to maximize their earnings even more. The big thing is Bazley, and he's the prime case that we've been talking about since last March. He didn't actually go and play in the G League. He sat out, he did his training, and it worked for him.
Right.
He got that first round pick. Yeah. So someone's actually going to have to take the stand and do it, and do it on a prominent enough level that it turns heads and we follow those guys and we watch those G League games. That's what's going to have to change, and that's what I have a difficult time seeing because, you know, we've seen G League athletes go to FIBA and do the qualifying rounds, and that doesn't turn heads. We've seen good players go down to the G League, and, you know, we're not tuning into that. Even if Bazley did went and played this year, I don't think even I would have been watching, no matter where he ended up. You know, you'll see it on TV every once in a while, but they haven't taken the strides enough to market that G League. They're developing it.
Right.
They're instilling pay, and they're acknowledging that it exists. I think having it be a viable option is going to be a long-term thing.
Absolutely.
Beyond even the 2020s.
Low, 100%. I think, and I hate to keep coming back to this, but I think it's a big deal. LeBron isn't putting this many eggs in this basket for no reason. I have no idea. If a Nike can get behind an idea to get these players that 1 year of pay, bridging the gap between high school and the NBA, if you can get a Nike, if you can get a LeBron and a Nike involved, there's a lot of possibility there.
Wouldn't that be something? Because Adidas and friends got the scrutiny of the FBI investigation last year in the college basketball. That was college basketball's chance to change. That was where they could have reformed. Condoleezza Rice made suggestions to the system that could have changed. And you have the spotlight of Zion Williamson shining the light on this sport like it hasn't been shined since, I don't know, Anthony Davis toward the beginning of the decade when they just mowed through everybody.
Something like that.
That was the chance where they could have said, things aren't working here. Let's see what we can do to change. Now people got indicted, assistant coaches got kicked out, and maybe we'll even have more sanctions coming for a place like, I don't know, Arizona. None of that's going to change what we've seen in the last 30 years in the sport, and I don't think there's going to be a prime chance for the sport to change going forward. It'd be cool, though, to see these shoe companies that got blasted in this investigation lead the charge for guys to go elsewhere, though, and actually make this a system where they're investing in these guys in an open and legal manner.
Yeah. I think I don't understand all the finances involved because I don't know how much money you have to pay these guys for them to not go to a college. Because I think there is still a draw to a Duke. There still is a draw to a North Carolina. There still is a draw to playing in March Madness. I don't think that'll ever go away. I don't think the institution of college basketball will ever fade like that because of its history. I think at some point, though, they're going to have to adapt, or the players will. You might have a lot of four-year guys in college, and maybe college basketball goes back to the way the purists liked it. But those guys that we've tuned in to watch for the past, you know, 12, 13 years, really since Kevin Durant and Greg Oden, that, you know, the first one and done year, if there's a viable option in the States for them to bridge the year between high school and the pros, they're going to do it.
I've always been a strong advocate of that G League path, and I thought that Bazley was going to be the one who would pioneer it. It was disappointing to me that he didn't. I wonder what college basketball would be left with in a situation where a viable alternative emerged. I don't think it's going to happen in the 2020s. Where would college basketball be left? Would the talent be enough to still draw eyes? Are the brands like Syracuse and Duke still strong enough where if you had a lower tier of players coming in, because the top guys are going to the G League, would college basketball as a spectacle still be able to survive? I mean, we've lost the Big East. We've lost the prominence of brands and four-year players and Christian Leitners and all of that in the past decades. Now if we lose top-tier recruits to places like Duke, I wonder how that affects us. Well, I still think it'd be strong enough with the brands that it could still go forward, but you might see it be less of a national sport, especially during the regular season.
Someone's going to adapt. Somebody on either side of this argument is going to adapt. And based on everything we've seen, players are more willing to adapt and more willing to find alternatives than the NCAA is to change. So at some point when there's a good enough option for players, they'll flood to it. I'm convinced of that.
We have three more questions that we're going to get to. The pressing questions going into the 2020s here on the Dome Theory podcast. Unfortunately, Antonio Brown interrupted us for now, but I'm not going to complain because that is showing us that we have something special here, that topic just flew into our laps. I'm Bobby Manning. That's Talon McLeod. Hopefully you enjoyed that introduction to him, because you're going to hear him here behind the booth, whether we're interviewing people, whether we're having friends here on campus too to talk about these issues. And this is the Bobcast, though. You know, it's still here. So if you're tuning in for that, don't worry, it's still the same old show. Dome Theory, Bobby Manning, Talon McLeod, we'll see you next week.
Dome Theory.